air today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, less than a fifth of children and teenagers with disabilities on the island of Ireland are getting their recommended daily exercise, according to a new report. The 2022 report, Ireland North and South Report Card on Physical Activity for Children and Adolescents, graded the overall physical activity levels that children were getting as a minus C grade and assigned an F grade for activity levels among children with disabilities. On the line is Wesley O'Brien. He's one of the investigators on the report. Wesley, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Owen, and thank you very much for taking the time to listen to our work that was completed on the physical activity report card for the Irish North and South regions.
No problem at all. It's great to speak to you on the programme and thanks for taking our call. So, as I mentioned there at the start, this means essentially that 40 to 46% of children and adolescents are getting their recommended physical activity. It is an improvement on 2016 though, Wesley.
That's right, Owen. And the way we're looking at it at the moment, I guess, the two main findings that have been coming out of this report card is exactly what you've mentioned in the title. About half of our children without disabilities appear to be meeting the physical activity recommendations for public health. Similarly, when we analysed that data by children and adolescents with disabilities, we can conclude quite definitively that very few children with disabilities are actually meeting the physical activity guidelines for health. So there's a huge disparity there, Owen, and this is the first time that such data has been reported on our previous work in 2016.
It is, yeah. And you might just take us through perhaps the recommendations for children between, say, age 6 to 17, what those daily recommendations are and maybe how they're not meeting them.
Yeah, I'd be very happy to do that, Owen, because there has been some changes to the physical activity recommendations for public health. So for as long as many people on your show have been listening to the recommendations for exercise for children and adolescents, the key number has always been the number 60, and that represents the number of minutes that children and adolescents should be active on a daily basis. And that's 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity, and those two words, moderate and vigorous, are very important. But in 2020, just towards the latter end of our first year in the public health turmoil of COVID-19, the guidelines actually changed, and they specified that children and adolescents should be doing on average 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity per day. And that slightly changed the goalposts a little bit, the word on average, which means that if children maybe were to accumulate 45 minutes on a Monday, well, then there was an element that maybe they could compensate by doing 75 minutes on a Tuesday. So that was an important stipulation. But the most important guideline, I think, is that the guidelines remain the exact same for children with and without disabilities. And when we see the data from this 2022 report card, they are quite alarming to suggest that there is a huge imbalance between the C grade versus the F grade that has been awarded for both populations.
And Wesley, obviously, you know, children with disabilities, they may need more support to get that physical activity, you know, maybe family and peer support to be physically active compared with the general population. And I know parts of this report now are calling for more investments and more supports there for children with disabilities to reach their recommended exercise guidelines.
Yep. I see this as a catch-22 situation, Owen, and I'll try and explain that as best I can. It's very important that children and adolescents are supported by their immediate family members, members maybe of their community, their friends and peers, etc. But equally, it's very important that a child or an adolescent has the autonomy independently, if at all possible, to participate in physical activity. So what we have found in the current report is that actually children and adolescents without disabilities tend to actually take more responsibility to be active themselves, whereas children and adolescents with disabilities tend to have more of that familial and peer support. So we do need to think maybe a little bit differently in this country as to how we're providing physical activity opportunities for children and adolescents without disabilities, I think.
As I said at the outset as well, Wesley, despite a slight improvement in the overall physical activity levels across the island of Ireland since 2016, the report also identified a number of inequalities in achieving this recommended minimum. And, you know, maybe there's a gender imbalance as well, and perhaps those from lower socioeconomic backgrounds met the guidelines less often.
Yeah, there absolutely was. And the three, I suppose, outstanding results that came to the attention of the team were as follows, Owen. And this is very well established, and the pattern hasn't changed, particularly for gender. We can conclusively now report that males in the 6 to 17 year age bracket are more physically active than their female counterparts. And I've been doing a lot of work myself in University College Cork here in the area of promoting equal opportunities for female teenagers and children participating, yet the data still reports this gender inequality. The second one, we do see an age-related decline and in terms of physical activity participation. And what we're seeing here is that the younger you are, the more likely is that you're going to be physically active. And that mightn't come as a surprise to your listeners, but we do have a huge challenge ahead of us in trying to make sure that teenagers, particularly those aged 15, 16 and 17, sustain their involvement over the next decade or generation in physical activity and sport. And if I may add, the final inequality that we're seeing is that children and adolescents from lower socioeconomic status backgrounds are unfortunately less likely to meet the physical activity guidelines for health. And that, to me, is a huge challenge going forward, and a challenge that maybe practitioners, researchers and all that work with children and young people should roll up their sleeves now and try and bring to the attention of the public health.
Just to pick up on that term that we've been using throughout this interview, Wesley, and you've mentioned it there again, physically active. That is such a broad term, and I think maybe teenagers and children might be turned off by the wording of it. It can mean anything from playing team sports, going for a walk, going for a swim. You know, there is something there for everyone to be physically active in.
There absolutely is. And I've tried to be very conscientious this morning when I've been speaking to you on not to use the words fitness, not to use the words exercise, not to use the words even on occasion sport. Physically active, as you have correctly outlined, is a term that involves any bodily movement which children and adolescents can do once their heart rate increases. And for some, and quite a large majority in this country, they like to participate in sports, whether that be individual or team sports. But as we've seen over the last 2.5 years, we've seen a huge move towards more socially recreational physical activities, like outdoor walking, like sea swimming, and all of the things that maybe children and adolescents can do with their family and friends without maybe joining a local team or an individual sport environment. So physical activity is an opportunity for all once you're moving your body in a sufficient, intense manner.
Well, the 2022 report card is the third report of its kind for Ireland and Northern Ireland and provides a grade across 11 indicators for physical activity among minors. The report card for the island of Ireland was produced as part of the organisation Active Healthy Kids Global Alliance, which was established in 2014 to promote exercise and physical activity among children and adolescents. The report card is funded by the Public Health Agency, Department of Health and Healthy Ireland, Sport Northern Ireland, Sport Ireland and the Institute of Public Health. And as we mentioned there from the outset as well, Ireland receiving a minus C grade for children without disabilities and an F grade for activity levels among children with disabilities. And joining us this morning was one of the investigators on that report, Wesley O'Brien. Wesley, many thanks for taking our call.
Thank you very much, Owen. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, very interesting there. And of course, you can read more by Googling that report and finding out more information on it. Now, just before we go to Kira, we have another message in to us with another birthday request for Sarah Burke in Conroy Park in Kilcullen. The very best, our very happy birthday to you. That comes in from Teresa and Lucy, who says that you are a very kind neighbour. So, Sarah Burke, lots of requests coming in for you this morning. Kira, before we take a break, we're going to to go back to an issue that we've been covering on this programme and also on Kildare Focus over the last couple of days. You spoke to Fiona O'Loughlin, Fianna Fáil Senator, on the show yesterday. We have a clip of her. It's to do with this burglary and, I suppose, ransacking in Sarsfield's GAA over the last few days.
Yes, yeah, so two break-ins happened at the GAA house. So it was on the early hours of Sunday and the early hours of Monday morning. On the early hours of the Sunday, they had taken a large quantity of alcohol, the chairperson believes, from approximately 1,500 to 2,000 euro worth of it. And then on the Monday, the Gardaí just worded it as they ransacked the place, so nothing was actually taken. But the chairperson of Sarsfields is Brendan Ryan, and he did mention the house adjacent to it. So I got on to Kildare County Council about it, and they did say that they can confirm the property referred to in the email is not a Kildare County Council property, because I know some people at the GAA club were kind of questioning, could it potentially be? Local authorities, they say, are responsible for investigating reports of derelict sites in their area, and they can confirm that the property is currently being investigated by Kildare County Council under the Derelict Sites Act. And I did speak to Fiona O'Loughlin yesterday, and you do have a clip of her, just to let people know. This Derelict Site Act fixed notice that was put up onto the site over the past month was put up on the 27th of July, and the owners of the house, or the plot of land, whichever way you want to word it as, have a month to respond. So today's the 26th of August, tomorrow is the last day for their response, because obviously then that will be a month. But here's Fiona O'Loughlin, Kildare Senator.
I was in contact with Kildare County Council, and I'm sure that many others were also. But just in terms of that engagement, I am really glad that this site has been entered onto the derelict sites, the register. So basically at the moment, what that means is presently there's 25 sites that are actually on the County Kildare register. And so now there is an advertisement to put this particular site on the register. What that means is from the 27th of July, when the notice went up at the site and would have been publicly advertised both on local papers and on Kildare County Council website, etc., it's giving people, the owners, 1 month to come forward to make a case as to what they are going to do with that particular site and to claim ownership. And basically, if there isn't a response, and if there isn't, let's just say, a positive engagement about what can happen, so that Kildare County Council would see that possibly the landowners do have something in mind that might add to the area, what would happen then is that the there would be a market value. So a local estate agent would be engaged to put a market value on the site. That would go up in the register, and essentially then 7% of the market value would be put as a fine against the ownership of the building. And this would happen on an annual basis, and interest indeed would be charged also, and it can actually go up to 10%. So this was brought in 1990, I think it was, and essentially it really is to try to make sure that we don't have derelict sites. So it's an incentive to those that own these sites to actually clean them up and do something positive with them.
Have your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare today on 0833 97 97 97.
Well, as we've been telling you, the Commission for Regulation of Utilities has announced a suite of new customer protection measures for the coming winter to further enhance the existing protections that are in place. And on the line now is Carl Richardson. He's Head of Communications and Public Affairs with the CRU. Carl, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Morning, Owen. Thanks for having me on.
I'm sure these new measures have been introduced, obviously, in the context of the current volatility in global energy prices, and I suppose with the objective of enhancing protection for domestic electricity and gas customers for the coming winter.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think everybody's well aware of the challenges that are out there for customers. Certainly the Commission, we're aware of those. And part of our role is actually to ensure that customers are protected, and that suppliers and how they deal with customers are doing the right things with those customers as well. And I think the important thing is the measures that we announced yesterday are there were already measures in place, but I think given that context, as you said, of how prices are moving, we felt it was important that we need to improve those and look at those in a bit more detail. And I think the important one, and there's a couple of key ones there, which certainly from a disconnections perspective, there was and there is always a moratorium on disconnections for all customers during, I suppose, over the December to January period. That's been extended to 3 months from December up onto the end of February. Excuse me. And also for vulnerable customers, those who may well be registered, who are critically dependent on electrically powered devices or for other reasons may be vulnerable customers, that moratorium is, on any disconnections has moved from the 1st of October onto the end of March, so increased to 6 months. But I think the important thing to remember is that anybody who may well be getting in difficulty with repaying bills, it's really important that they engage with their supplier. There is already a supplier's code of conduct and an engage code, which all suppliers are signed up to, where anybody who is engaging with them as regards to paying bills will not be cut off. So it's important. So there's two levels of protection there, really, for people. So it's important for people to remember that if they do get into difficulties paying bills over this winter period, to engage with their suppliers. And also, as I said, there is the other level of protection as regards disconnections.
Absolutely. I mean, in a nutshell, these rules are in place to ensure the customers experience a high standard of protection with when interacting with energy suppliers. You mentioned the extended disconnections moratorium there as well. There's a couple of other key changes that are being made here. I know they're already in place, but I suppose adjustments to these rules. Extended debt repayment periods as well. There's a change there.
Yeah, absolutely. And currently, there was never actually a minimum timeline put in place by which customers had to repay any accumulated debt. So if they were in the repayment plans may well have been set over 6 to 12 months with suppliers. What we've done now is extended those that there has to be a minimum of 24 months for customers to repay debt. So if there is obviously a built up, unpaid bills, that they can spread those repayments up to 24 months. Of course, customers can still pay back whenever they feel they're able to do that. But again, we felt it was important to extend those to over a 24-month period.
There's also a reduced debt burden on pay-as-you-go top-ups and better value for those that are on financial hardship meters.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important one as well. So anybody who was on a pay-as-you-go meter, if they had built up any debt, any top-up or VEN, so people on pay-as-you-go can go into, online or onto other portals or into some shops, and they can top up their gas and electricity that way. What would have happened if there was any debt there, that any top-up that they put on, 25% of that money they put on would go back to paying down the debt. So essentially, if you put in 20 euros, you had 5 euros would be deducted to repay any debt that was outstanding. What we've done now is reduce that from 25% down to a maximum of 10%. So that 20 euro top up that people do, 2 would only go back to bringing that debt down any further, which is hopefully giving people more peace of mind and obviously more energy and to use during the winter period.
Okay, and just one of the other key changes here: there's a promotion of vulnerable customer register. What's this about?
Yeah, so it's important to know that if people are qualify and can qualify as a vulnerable customer, and as I mentioned, it's any of those customers who are dependent, either have a disability or people who may well be dependent on critical medical equipment. that before there has always been a register, and when I've gone on and changed supplier, which I would do every year to get the best value out of what is there with suppliers, is they do have to let you know that, ask you the question, are you a vulnerable customer? Do you think you may qualify? And they would give you that details. Now, that was possibly the only level engagement or notification they may have given to customers. So what we've asked them to do now is to actively promote that. So outside of that first engagement, they have to up their, I suppose, their promotion and their communication to customers. And we're obviously looking at about what sort of levels those are over the next couple of months to make sure that, you know, there's an increased level of engagement and people are much more aware that they can't, they may well qualify as a vulnerable customer, which will again give them an extra level of protection over the winter period.
Okay, I just see a message come in from a listener. Why does a provider charge more for prepaid than bill pay, considering the user will never go into arrears? The provider gets the money up front. No need to read meters, no need to send bills, yet they charge more for prepay. I'm not sure if you can comment on that, Carl, but I suppose the key message here is that there are a number of protections that are there in place for customers, and it's just about engaging with the providers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the as we've already mentioned, these are in place now, but these are what we felt are improvements to those. And I think the supplier engage code is there also to protect customers, you know, if they do find themselves getting difficulties. So it is there. We've said, like, at the moment, we do see a really difficult winter period, but there are other areas that people can think about, not just about paying the bills and looking at these protections. And it is looking, being careful about their use of energy, especially during peak time, and trying to reduce their use if they find that their electricity bill and gas bills are going too high for them. And just being very cognizant of that over the winter period, but knowing that the most important thing to do is it is still possible to get the best value out of the marketplace from suppliers if you switch on a regular basis. While all energy prices are obviously moving up in the upper direction at this point in time, there is still value that people can find in the marketplace, so it's important to do that. And when you're with your supplier, and if you are really finding it difficult in regards to repaying those, it's important you talk to your supplier. They're more happy to try and arrange a repayment plan with you than trying to lose a customer and also having to try and reclaim any outstanding debt outside of a repayment plan. So it's in everybody's interest for people to talk to each other.
Okay. On that note, Head of Communications and Public Affairs with the Commission of Regulation of Utilities, that is Carl Richardson. Thanks for taking our call this morning, Carl, and good morning to you. Now, just returning to an issue that we discussed on the programme yesterday and to bring you up to date on the work that we have been doing behind the scenes over the last day or so, we were contacted by a number of parents who were concerned upon learning that the town link service from Clane through Sallins to Naas had been cancelled, and indeed public representatives in the area were in touch with us also. And parents were worried about what the cancellation might mean for students attending Pipers Hill College, that's out on the Kilcullen Road, and whether any contingencies were in place. We contacted the school councillors on the Naas Municipal District and also JJ Kavanagh's bus. We haven't heard directly from the company, but we understand that this announcement was made at the end of July and the route was cancelled because it was no longer economically viable. And look, from a business point of view, that is completely understandable. But on the line once again is Labour Councillor Anne Breen. She's on the Naas Municipal District. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Owen.
We have an update on this situation, and that is just developing over the last 24 hours.
Yes, I have been in contact with parents, and they got an email from the school, from Pipers Hill School, saying that Dublin Decker Bus Company have taken on board a temporary, a trial period for the students to the end of September. I'm hoping that this will be permanent for the parents, because there is a lot of stressed parents out there and they feel that they've been let down by JJ Kavanagh. Now, a bus will be leaving Sallins at 7:50 each morning. It stops at the centre at Munreid. It goes to Naas Post Office and it'll pick up students there and Super Value and then make the journey up to Pipers Hill. Now, this will be a journey every day, every morning, and it will cost €2 per journey and €2 back. Now, parents feel that this is a good idea, but they would like this to be permanent. But I would like to thank Dublin Decker Bus Company for coming on board, even if it is a temporary, and hopefully it will be permanent for the students that are going and for the parents who are very stressed at this time because of what is happening.
Okay, it's a double-decker bus, as I understand it. It has a capacity to carry 78 students, or 79 students. The proposal, as you say, Anne, is for the bus to leave the village of Salins at 7.50 each morning, so 10 to 8, and then stops at Centrum Monreed Road, Nace Post Office and the Supervalue in Nace, ending at Piper's Hill College. A single journey costs €2 and will be payable to the driver, and the route will then run in reverse each evening after school. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. And hopefully the parents will take this on board and this will be permanent, I'm hoping. And I'll work on this with parents to make sure that this will be permanent.
Okay, Labour Councillor on the Nace Municipal District, Anne Breen. Thanks for bringing us up to date on that, Anne, and good morning to you. So hopefully that alleviates the pressure. It certainly does for the early part of the school year, because I know a lot of parents were worried, what are we going to do? Because school returns, some have already returned today and yesterday and certainly next week as well. But that will alleviate the pressure going forward. And as Anne says, hopefully something more permanent will be put in place after that. But I can tell you that Dublin-Decker bus service will be in place for the whole month of September. So at least the children from Salins and the Monreed area of Nace will be able to make it up to Piper's Hill College out on the Kilcullen Road for the month of September, and something more permanent might be put in place after that. So that is the latest that we have for you on that at the moment.